Welcome to the Got Your Six podcast. This podcast brings together current service members and veteran high performers to share their methods, strategies, and ideas delivered in an informative and, most importantly, actionable way that'll help you lead yourself and those around you from the battlefield to the boardroom. Coming to you every episode, I'm your host, Tony Nash, and into the breach.
Nothing mentioned on this podcast is an endorsement or opinion of the Department of Defense.
I got your six, we got your back. Got your six, we got your back. Got your six, we got your back. I got your six.
Sixers, what an unbelievable treat we have. We talk about on the podcast going from the battlefield to the boardroom, and our guest today lives and breathes that. Daryl Yutt is the Chief of Business Operations at the National Medal of Honor Museum. Former Green Beret, well, once a Green Beret, always a Green Beret, and just an absolute amazing, amazing person. Daryl, thank you so much for being on the Got Your Six podcast.
Yeah, man, it's an honor to be here. What's up, Sixers? What's up?
We love it. Daryl, I think your military service or understanding what that meant really started back with Coach Thornburg in high school because he was a Green Beret and he was your football coach. How did that shape you really kind of understanding those values even before you entered the service?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think that he was teaching me and my fellow football players, my fellow high schoolers. I mean, he was teaching us so many lessons about life and future military service that we had no clue about, you know, as far as service and patriotism and how important those things are. I mean, I think he was passing on so many just strong life lessons, how valuable hard work is and getting after it. And a lot of things, just in my opinion, a lot of things translate from the football field to life and wrestling. I mean, all the different sports. I mean, you get knocked down, you get back up. You don't win every single time. You know, there's sometimes that you have to, you lose and how to be a graceful loser. I mean, there's just so many different life lessons that, man, I just really appreciate having him as a mentor and as a leader. And if he's even still alive, I'd love to have a conversation with him and just let him know the appreciation and the gratitude that I have, because he just taught just so many different lessons, you know?
Yeah. And like you said, there's a lot. And sometimes the analogy is people kind of roll their eyes, but from the sports world to the battlefield, there's a lot of analogies and similarities that you talked about. And then especially growing up in like West Virginia, like you mentioned a couple other times in our previous conversations, what that was like to really understand, and you just mentioned it, that hard work piece. Do you remember a specific time in the military where you kind of look back and you're like, if it wasn't for Coach and learning those lessons, there is no way I would be here today?
Yeah. It's actually going to hit close to you here. So, you know, my first few years in the military, I was in basic training in July of 1990. So my first few years, I spent 2 years in Fort Ord, California, spent a year at Fort Lewis, Washington. And then I, you know, PCS'd to Fort Campbell, Kentucky. And that was even though, you know, Fort Lewis has special forces, you know, they have first special forces group that's there. I never saw those guys because they were on a totally different compound. So I didn't even know they existed. I didn't know who they were. But at Fort Campbell, you know, I lived on post. And I would take like one of the back roads, like one of the range roads to the office. I was a Rockasan. Want to give a shout out to my Rockasan piece.
You know, I'm a big Rockasan guy myself, living that life every day.
Yeah, I want to share with you a Rockasan story here too, just to see how much things have changed after this story though. But I was exposed to special forces and I saw those guys. I mean, of course, at first I was like, who are those guys out there training with no gear on? Or they got ball caps on, you know, like, who are these cats? Because that's not what we look like when we're at the range. You know, we got all of our body armor and helmet and all kinds of stuff. So I started noticing the special forces guys. And then that's when like the light bulb went off. I was like, oh, wait a minute. I had a football coach that was special forces. Because, you know, as a young 15, 16, 17, 18 year old kid, I mean, you hear special forces and you're impressed, but you don't really know what you're that super impressed about. It's just kind of like
it's got that gravitas.
It's just something out there. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, but then I started tying it together and I was like, oh my gosh, my football coach, that's what he did. And we did stay in contact there for a few years after I graduated. So this would be 1995. I graduated in 1990. So I would still, call him from time to time. And it's like, hey, do you think I can do this land navigation? I seem to be all right at it as an infantry guy, but I heard these special forces guys, like, it's a whole new level. So that's when, it took about 5 years for the light bulb to really go off. And that's when I think because of him, that connection, it helped kind of push me. It helped push me over the line, like, you can do this. At least give it a shot.
Yeah. Giving yourself that permission has really kind of served you at a lot of different points, and especially getting to where you are now as Chief of Business Operations for the National Medal of Honor Museum. First off, the museum doesn't exist yet. I mean, it's being built, which is awesome, but that for all these years, and you can kind of go more into the data, we never had a National Medal of Honor Museum.
Yeah, that's important. It baffles a lot of people. And it's like, wait a minute, there's not a National Medal of Honor Museum. I mean, this is the highest award for our country for valor, valor in combat. This is the highest award. It was created in 1861. Abraham Lincoln, the first award was in 1863. There's been, approximately 3,500, a little over 3,500. We only have 64 living Medal of Honor recipients right now as we speak. In two more days, we'll have 65. March 3rd, President Biden is awarding another a Medal of Honor to a Special Forces guy that came out of 5th Group. Also had some command time at 10th Group. So it's almost baffling for people. Now, there are museums that have Medal of Honor displays, and the U.S. Army Museum. There are some museums that, they're heavy on the Medal of Honor. But as far as like a National Medal of Honor, it's not something that existed. So once we started talking about it and spreading the word, it was like, gosh, how can we get behind this? But as far as those values that are inherent in the Medal of Honor recipients and what the Medal of Honor represents, the six that you mentioned, courage, sacrifice, commitment, integrity, citizenship, patriotism. I mean, a lot of those are American values. There are values, but what we're really trying to do and what the team is trying to do is to weave those into the story. Because when you come and visit the National Medal of Honor Museum, it's not going to be a chronological, I would say, kind of boring. It's not going to be
right.
You walk in.
It's an experience.
And you start right at the Civil War, 1863, and then you walk around the whole entire museum, and then you end up in GWAT with, Iraq and Afghanistan. Like, we're not doing a chronological museum. We're doing a biography museum. So it's going to be heavy on the stories. The stories that are going to be wrapped around these values, courage, sacrifice, commitment, integrity, citizenship, patriotism. I mean, you're going to be able to pull them all out and you're going to be able to see. And I think what's really going to be important for the folks that come and visit the museum, hopefully they'll be able to see, like, okay, I don't have to serve my country. I don't have to be a Ranger or a Special Forces Green Beret. I can be a teacher, and it takes courage to stop kids from bullying another kid, like that takes courage. What are some of these, what are these lessons that I can pull from these ordinary Americans that did extraordinary things on probably the worst day of their life? What lessons can we extract to be better people, to be a better dad, to be a better nurse, to be a better firefighter? I mean, I think there's so many different stories. And I think when they start seeing, like one of the featured recipients, Master Sergeant Roy Benavidez, Special Forces MACB SOG, if you do any research on his actions and even the things that he did, Tony, after he was awarded the Medal of Honor, all the speeches and all of those different types of things that he did to help spread, patriotism and love of country and honor and service and all of these great things. I mean, this man was a legend, which if you see over my shoulder, I have Eric Blom's book, Legend, about Master Sergeant Roy Benavidez. And it is a fantastic book. Is like once you start getting to a certain point, like you just can't put the book down. It's one of those books. Like,
yeah,
his action is amazing. But But those, man, those values I think are so important. And I think our country is starving for those values, Tony. I think our country is starving for, hey, where can we go as a family, as a couple, and we're going to get great values and we're going to, you know, unity over division, love of country, you know, some of these things, like what's some of that wholesome fun that we could do, hopefully in the Arlington, Texas area, the district, the entertainment district. Maybe we got a folks that are coming in for a Dallas Cowboys game and they're trying to kill a little time on a Saturday, or we got some Texas Rangers fans and they're trying to kill a little time because our museum is going to be co-located, you know, right beside Globe Life Field where the Rangers play, which they're opening up March 30th, right beside AT&T Stadium where the Cowboys play. We're strategically located between Dallas-Fort Worth Airport and Dallas Love Field. You know, Texas is the second state in the country that just hit 30 million people, second only to California. Pre-COVID, I mean, we were getting 50 million plus in the Dallas-Fort Worth area visitors. Dallas-Fort Worth is the fourth largest metro, 8 million some people. I mean, we're in a great location because, you know, when you build a museum like this, it's going to be a destination. Well, you hope it's a destination. You hope people come and visit and spend time, but you got to have that flow of people that are coming in, right?
And that built space, that built environment, as you know, an urban planner, that just speaks to me and I absolutely love it. But being around all of this, being around the museum being built, the whole foundation, it has to continue to rub off on you. And you're constantly inspired. Where are you kind of directing all of that effort now to grow, right? Like, is there some sort of like skill or talent that you're really working on? Maybe because you're doing all of this and you're having to kind of talk more about it. How are you kind of continuing to develop yourself, Daryl?
That's a great question, Tony, and I appreciate that. I'd say for me, man, I've spent my entire career, most of it, you know, I spent 26 and a half years in the Army. 20 years of that was in Special Forces, being a quiet professional. So I'm used to that. Like, that's my comfort zone. And I am a self-confessed, you know, introvert. I'm the typically the quiet guy. It's easy for me to talk to you, Tony, because you serve your country. And I want to say thank you to you and your wife for serving our great country. It means a lot to me. But, you know, I'm an introvert and I'm typically the guy, I would be the guy in the meeting that could just be sitting there and just taking notes and kind of being a little pragmatic and listening in. And I don't need to feel like I need to talk and, you know, all that type of stuff. So to get to your question and to answer your question, I'm trying to do more engagements. I think this is my seventh podcast. Really proud to be here on your podcast, but I think this is my seventh podcast and this is something that I'm working on and I'm, you know, I have to prep and do all those type of things. And I want to be a good podcast guest. I'm also working on my speaking because we have some fantastic stories. I mean, is there any better material? I mean, I feel like there's times where I feel like I want to call up Hollywood and say, hey, I got a crazy idea. It's billions of dollars worth of revenue. Are you ready to listen to it? Here it is. Why don't you do some more stories on our country's greatest heroes instead of like the fake heroes? Like, these are real life heroes. Do some movies. People will watch them. I mean, it's a no-brainer to me, but I'm trying to be better at speaking. And we have an executive level coach that we're using. Because, you know, our institute guys, you know, like the project, the National Medal of Honor Museum Foundation, it's a three-pronged project. You know, we have the museum, we have the institute, and then we're eventually going to be building a monument in Washington, D.C. to honor our Medal of Honor recipients. The museum and the institute will be co-located in Arlington. So all of our institute guys, you know, they're going to be, you know, coaching and teaching and all of these different types of things. So we have someone that's working with them to make them even stronger than they already are because they're already dynamic. I mean, one of our guys is a PhD out of the Air Force Academy that's just ridiculously dynamic. And I was able to participate in this executive coaching and storytelling. So I can't wait. I mean, you're going to see a polished Daryl Lutt at some point, Tony. Maybe you won't even recognize me. I don't know. But I'm really fired up about that because I feel like I owe it to our recipients. I owe it to our mission to be able to tell some of these stories. I'm able to talk a little bit more about Master Sergeant Roy Benavidez because I've learned so much about him and read up on him. But it is definitely humbling, man, to be part of this foundation. I mean, my boss, the president and the CEO of the National Medal of Honor Museum Foundation is Chris Cassidy. He's a former Navy SEAL, served in Afghanistan. He's an MIT grad. He's a former chief NASA astronaut, spent a ton of time in space, you know, and that's my boss. Like I had an hour meeting with him today. Charlotte Jones is the chairwoman of our board.
Another rock star over at the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh man, she's a rock star. I can't say enough good things about Charlotte Jones. She's the executive vice president for the Cowboys. She's their chief brand officer. Her and her entire family are absolute 1,000,000% patriots that love this country. They love our military. They love our recipients. They do so much. They do so much for our country. It's amazing. I would like to tell a little small story about Charlotte that I heard before I interviewed with her. I'd read a story about a former Air Force guy. He had served in, you know, served in Iraq or Afghanistan, and I think he did like maybe 8 or 10 years. But he was terminal. He had terminal cancer, and he was a younger guy. So someone from, I think it was someone from like the San Antonio Spurs, they knew Charlotte, and it was football season. And this guy loved the Dallas Cowboys. He loved Emmitt Smith. And this is like on a Saturday, Tony. You know, the football game is Sunday. So this guy from the Spurs, San Antonio Spurs, he calls Charlotte Saturday sometime and says, I have an Air Force guy, former Air Force guy, served his country. He's got terminal cancer. Don't know how much longer he's got, but he's a diehard Cowboys fan. He loves Emmitt Smith. Is there anything that you might be able to do? And she said, can you get him here? Can you get him here for the game? And he said, yeah, absolutely. They got this guy at the game. They put him in a suite to watch his beloved Dallas Cowboys. He sat right beside Emmitt Smith, you know, the whole game. It was the first time he'd ever got to see the Cowboys play live. And Charlotte Jones is the one that set this up. And I believe within a week of that game, he ended up passing. But man, that hits you in the heart. Like that's like angel wing type stuff there, you know. But that's Charlotte Jones.
So Daryl, as we kind of talked about too, is right, you live by the motto, right? Service before self. Like you said, you did 26 years in the Army. How did you continue to put service before self after you hung up the uniform?
I had to kind of find my way a little bit, Tony, because my first big boy job, you know, first post-military job, I worked at the Museum of the Bible, which really, I mean, definitely facilitated where I'm at now. And who, you know, I retired out of Fort Bragg. Who would have thought I would have ended up in Washington, D.C. During construction phase of a $550 million museum, 430,000 square foot, you know, Museum of the Bible. Like, it's impossible. It's crazy. So that was a way of serving in a way, but I was there with people that were, it was like a calling, like, you know, like I was called here. And to be honest, I felt like, hey, this is a business decision for me because I just retired. I was a little scared during the transition, like what's going to happen? I mean, I'm used to getting paid twice a month. Like, what do you mean I'm not going to get paid twice a month, you know? So it was a business decision for me, but I definitely felt like a missing part of my heart a little bit. Like I wasn't serving. You know, I was serving the museum and I was serving the guests because I started out as a director of security, transitioned to a director of ops. So I kind of went through that transition. And then my next gig, I was a consultant, and that's heavy business development. And, you know, hey, we're paying you this. We expect you to make 2.5 to 3 times that, bringing in that business, you know, revenue. And that is a way to serve, and you are keeping the country safe. So that was great. But when I had an opportunity to sit down with Chris Cassidy and go over some lessons learned from my previous history and all the museums that I'd either been involved with or worked at, and I was just like, man, I feel strongly about your all's mission. This is a great mission. This is a great job. This is honorable work. It makes me want to wake up and drive in the morning to work. So there was definitely a transition for me, and I'm sure that's how it is for a lot of people. But it's very important for me because I think these stories are so important. These stories need to be told. A lot of them are kind of getting lost a little bit. You know, I think it's important. It makes me feel like I'm still contributing to the country and to the cause. And there's different ways people go about it, man. Some people get angry and, you know, they're very hateful and, you know, they do whatever on their social media and all that type of stuff. But I mean, there's really only a few ways you can try to, you know, if you're part of the problem or part of the solution, right?
Right. And you had to go through that journey in order to understand what service really meant to you because you were so used to wearing it on your chest.
Yeah.
And I see that you have, you know, for those that are listening the audio, Daryl has a phenomenal background. I have to ask about the sneaker behind you, like that patriotic sneaker. There's got to be a story there.
Yeah. So these are some awesome sneakers, man. And a friend of mine that I met just from working at the foundation and being connected on LinkedIn. I was never on social media, Tony.
It's hard given your line of work. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. But my second, you know, when I was doing the consultant gig, my boss was a retired colonel out of the Army, Bill Edwards, good boss. And Bill's like, hey, man, I understand the whole Green Beret, you know, whatever, but you're a consultant now. Like, you're not a Green Beret anymore. You're a consultant. And people want to hear, like, if we're going to try to sell some kind of security service or, you know, for you to do business, they want to know your background and what you've done. So you have to get your name out there, at least get on LinkedIn. So I got on LinkedIn. That was good because it really helped out a lot of things, especially where I'm at now. So that is the one social media that I'm on. I'm not on any of the other stuff. But anyway, connected with Darren Davis, and he is the one, him and his wife, they created, it's RDC Shoes, Romeo Delta Charlie. RDC Shoes, they created this company after 9/11. Darren Davis, he's a devil dog. He was a former Marine Corps guy, served his country, was so inspired and wanted to do something after 9/11. So they created these shoes. The shoe that you're looking at over my shoulder, it's the Glory Shoe. And Darren did this shoe for, he gives, I think it's like $5 or $10 to the Congressional Medal of Honor Society and Woody Williams Foundation, Woody Williams being the Medal of Honor recipient from my home state of West Virginia. So he gives part of the proceeds to those two organizations. He does a lot of things. Him and I, you know, we stay in touch, and he's got a great foundation, and I think he's going to come down to Texas. But I would love to get him connected with you, Tony. And you're right, man. That's an awesome, beautiful shoe, right?
It is a sweet shoe. But as we kind of talked about with service, too, it is not just like this very linear path. There's a lot of highs and lows, successes, setbacks. Where ultimately has there been a failure, or we'll even call it just a setback, that has ultimately set you just up for massive success?
When I was still in, that's a great question, Tony. Thank you. I was still in, man. I was fast tracking pretty much my entire career. And I'm not trying to sound like arrogant or bragging or anything, but, you know, I came in, I was a 20-year-old E5. I couldn't even buy beer at the class 6, right? So that's kind of weird. But I was a 20-year-old E5, did great things, E6, E7. I think it was a 32 or 33-year-old E8 leading the team in combat. I think it's like 10 combined rotations. I didn't lead all of those, but, you know, I had two great team sergeant rotations in 06 to Baghdad and 07 in Baghdad, which was just absolutely Donkey Kong crazy. So, man, my career was rolling. My personal life wasn't that great because I was always gone. But I had, you know, I had some great rotations and I had a lot of success in the military. So toward the end of 07, I got custody of my son. You know, I'd been divorced. So that was kind of, you know, it was a very unique situation to be an active duty operational Green Beret, even though I just came back. And so I ended up going to SWCC. I went to the schoolhouse at Fort Bragg, which is, you know, the schoolhouse where they teach Green Berets. And then I got custody of my daughter. So at the time, career-wise, I viewed that as a failure because I was like, dude, I'm right there. Like, I'm 32, 33, 34 E8, multiple combat rotations, just knocked it out of the park. Best team in 10th Special Forces Group. The next year I was runner up. I mean, we almost won it back to back. I'm ready to be a Sergeant Major, E9. I'm ready for more rotations, take the company down range. You know, I'm maybe get into Afghanistan because I always wanted to go to Afghanistan, never did. And that's another thing that I think is kind of weird about service is people are like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry to hear that you are going to Iraq. And it's like, no, man, don't feel sorry for me. You might want to feel sorry for the people over there, but this is the Super Bowl, baby. Like, we're going. But the personal things, you know, my kids, I view that career-wise as like, man, this really hurt. Like, game over, career, you know, single dad, two kids, the game was over. And to me, I had to deal with that as a man. I know I'm doing the right thing, right? It's like, man, I'm doing the right thing. I'm taking care of my kids because there was a lot of stuff going on and I had to do that. And I wanted to do that. But at the same time, it was like, man, I've just dumped everything into this. And I kind of struggled with that a little bit. And then it started working out and I started figuring out how to be a dad and how to get my kids around and do all the dad things. And now here I am years and years removed from that. You know, my son's serving. He's down at 6th Ranger Training Battalion. You know, my daughter is back in North Carolina. She's got a great guy, you know, getting ready to get married. They both graduated from Appalachian State in North Carolina. I couldn't be prouder as a dad, as a man, that I took a step out from serving. And I still served. You know, I still did my instructor time. I still did my staff time. I just got a big dose of it. But I couldn't be prouder that I actually did that. And I think at the time, that was a big failure for me. That's how I viewed it. But it was definitely my greatest success because my kids are wonderful.
As we wrap up, Daryl, there's a lot of things we talk about. But I want to know specifically today, how are you better than yesterday? And how have you kind of built a little momentum going into the future?
Yeah, that's a great question, man. I think I have, and I think this is good for people to have this, is to have a little gratitude, And if you just kind of, sit back a little bit and you're just thankful for some of the things. And I heard a really remarkable story, and it was after a podcast that I'd done. I went down to Alabama. I did Patriot to the Core podcast. With a guy named Thad Forrester. His little brother was killed in action. He was an Air Force combat controller. He was killed, killed in action in Afghanistan. But Thad was there in the studio with one of his friends. And we were talking about gratitude and appreciation. And he said, man, I really didn't understand it until I heard an amputee that, you know, this guy had served his country and he had lost his limb. And he was talking about, you know, being in this bathroom at like an airport and it was super small and tight and kind of nasty. You know, he's like, gosh, this is going to be a little tough, you know, but he came across a guy that was a double or triple amputee from Iraq or Afghanistan. And he was with his wife in the men's restroom in one of these tight stalls. And he started thinking about this other guy. And he was like, this is one of the most personal bodily function type of things and the space. And this man came into this bathroom with a smile on his face, happy guy. And he's getting ready to do this. And he's got his wife, like he can't even really do this himself. His wife has to do it. And this man has a smile on his face and he's going about his day. And that just really resonated. I mean, I just heard this story, but for me to have like some gratitude and some appreciation, you know, with the inspiration that I'm getting these daily doses of working at the foundation, man, I think that's important. I think it's a good message. There's a lot of sense of entitlement out there, but man, just to have a little gratitude to live in one of the greatest countries in the world. I mean, I think people should just have a little gratitude.
And Daryl, you mentioned people can connect with you on LinkedIn. Where can they go to learn more about the National Medal of Honor Museum?
Yeah, you can. There's not a lot of Daryl Lutz on LinkedIn, so please reach out. And I typically have like a little LinkedIn secret game that I play. You know, I typically post some stuff about books. I post a lot of stuff on podcasts. Once a month, I typically do a decent little post on the Medal of Honor Museum. But if you connect with me on LinkedIn, I'm there. There's not a lot of derelicts out there. You send me a DM or send me your email address. I'll add your email address to our weekly update that goes out. Tony, you saw the first weekly update today. What did you think of it, if you don't mind me asking?
Incredible. It's going to be just a space. I mean, you talked about it throughout our conversation here. State-of-the-art facility.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. Yeah, and because we're still 2 years out, so there's a lot of construction going on, but I try to do like a did you know or a fun fact or just kind of educate about the museum, because there's a lot of symbology that's being wrapped up into the museum. So I typically tie something in and then give you a good construction update. So if you send me a message, I'll add you to our distro list. But if you want to learn more about the Medal of Honor Museum, or even better, you want to be a partner or you want to donate, if you go to www.mohmuseum.org, there's tons of information on there. There's lots of different articles. There's lots of different videos. You'll see all of our partners. I mean, it's amazing. There's all kinds of stuff. And you can also follow us on all of the different social media channels, which I won't be able to list because I'm only on LinkedIn, but Facebook, Instagram, and whatever all the other stuff is. Look for the National Medal of Honor Museum and follow us and stay up to date. Get our newsletters. I mean, please be part of it.
Daryl, thank you so much for sharing your strategies, your methods, your tactics, and most importantly, thanks for having our Six.
Yeah, man. See you later, Sixers.
Sixers, Bruce Lee said, "I fear not the man who has practiced 10,000 kicks once, but I fear the man who has practiced one kick 10,000 times." I hear that and I think of the team over at Bridgebuilt. I own a Phoenix squat rack, and it is the absolute ultimate piece of gym equipment that I have at the house. Heavy-duty construction, versatile design, and the ability to fold up for limited space. Not to the wall, not to the floor. You just fold it up on wheels, move it wherever it needs to go. Head over to bridgebuilt.com and upgrade your gym today to the Phoenix squat rack. Hey Sixers, did you know the Got Your Six podcast is now streaming every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern and Saturdays at 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. Eastern on Wreaths Across America Radio, available on the iHeartRadio app, the Audacity app, and the TuneIn app. Just search the word Wreath. If you got something out of this, be a battle buddy. Share with a friend, pass it along. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, make sure you leave us a review and give us as many stars as you think we warrant, because we love what we do here at the Got Your Six podcast. We're always adapting and evolving this podcast because of you, the Sixers. And if you're listening on Spotify, hit that follow button. You'll never miss an episode when we drop new ones every Monday.
I don't know what you've been told, Sixers, but the lawyers would like us to remind you that the views, opinions, and comments expressed on the Got Your Six podcast are solely those of the hosts or guests, to include current and previous Department of Defense employees, and should in no way be considered the opinions of or endorsements on behalf of the Department of Defense or any of its components, divisions, contractors, or other current and previous staff members.